Overtourism in Japan and How It Hurts Small Businesses. Summary: author Craig Maude discusses the impact of overtourism on small businesses in cities. He highlights the negative effects, such as loss of community and authenticity, caused by excessive tourism. Maude suggests redirecting travelers to lesser-known destinations to alleviate the strain on popular tourist spots like Kyoto and promote sustainable tourism practices. Full article, Ridgeline subscribers. I'm Craig Maude, and I've been boo-worn out this last month following my Epic Things Become Other Things mega book tour. Finally, I'm gingerly emerging from my recovery cave. But reserve the right to retreat again. Here's a fresh dispatch in praise of small businesses and why overtourism can be anathema to them. A great city is typified by character, and the character of great cities is often built on the bedrock of small businesses. Conversely, chain shops smooth over the character of cities into anodyne nothingness. Think about a city you love. It's likely because of walkability, greenery, great architecture, and fun local shops and restaurants. Only psychopaths love Manhattan because of Dwayne Reed. If you've ever wondered why overtourism can be a kind of death for parts of a city, the parts that involve living there, commuting there, creating a life there, it's because it paradoxically disincentivizes building small businesses. Nobody opens a tiny restaurant or cafe to be popular on a grand, viral scale. Nor do they open them to become rich. So why do people open small shops? For any number of reasons, but my favorite is, they have a strong opinion about how some aspect of a business should be run, and they want to double down on it. For example, 40 years ago, Terui-san, the owner of Jazz Kisekai and Bashino Johnny's Up in Morioka, was like, nobody is spinning Waijayazu Japanese jazz, so I'm only going to rock it. That led to a bunch of cool knock-on connections, not the least of which was a lifelong friendship with the incredible Akiyoshi Toshiko. That singular thing can drive an initial impulse, but small business purpose quickly shifts into being a community hub for a core group of regulars. That community is probably the biggest asset of small business ownership. And the quickest way to kill community, perhaps the most valuable gift for running a small business, is to go viral in a damaging way. Pour out a cold brew for small shops with giant lines of transient tourists. New York Magazine just published a scathing-slash-entertaining-slash-hilarious-slash-depressing piece by Reeves Wiedemann on Kyoto's endemic visitor complications. It's a city crushed in parts but not on the whole by overtourism. This quote jumped out at me. James told me about another friend who owns a cocktail bar in Kyoto that was tick-toked. She had recently stopped by and found him in tears. The only reason he opened the bar, he said, was so locals and friends like her would come. Now all he had were customers he couldn't talk to. That James is Maggie James. I've known Maggie for nearly 20 years, and it's kind of amazing to see her rip in this article. It seems Wiedemann didn't censor much. And though Wiedemann tries to pull some optimism out of it all, it's as dire a portrait as you could imagine of what's happening to a place of delicacy and local charm like Kyoto. But what can you do if you're a small business and get tick-toked? Nothing really. Just suck it up and try to find some kind of goodness in the weirdness of the event slash the happening. Most of these owners have poured much of their life savings into opening these places, taken out loans, put months or years of work into designing and building out their spaces. Years building up regular clientele, forming relationships, knowing what people like, creating true community. It's not like they can just up and move and hide elsewhere. And why should they have to respond anyway? It's tricky to the max, and it's a problem that never really existed on this scale before social media. At risk of oversimplifying, most problems in the world today boil down to scale and abstraction. As scale increases, individuals become more abstract, and humanity and empathy are lost. This happens acutely when the algorithm decides to laser beam a small shop with 100 million views. If you cast a net to that many people, a vast chunk of them will not engage in good faith, let alone take a second to consider the feelings of residents or owners or why the place was built to begin with. Hence the crush, the selfish crush. Overtourism brings with it a corollary effect, what I call the Disneyland flip-flop. This happens when visitors fail to see, willfully or not, the place they're visiting as an actual city with humans living and working and building lives there, but rather as a place flip-flop through the lens of social media into a Disneyland, one to be pillaged commercially, assumed to reset each night for their pleasure, welcoming their transient deluge with open arms. This is most readily evident in, say, the Mario Kart Scourge of Tokyo, perhaps one of the most breathtakingly universally hated tourist activities. I dare you to find a resident who supports these idiots disrupting traffic as the megalopolis attempts to function around them. Another off-sited overtourism example is Kamakura Kakumi, a tiny station on the diminutive local Inodan train line featured in the popular slam dunk manga slash anime opening credits. The anime gained bonkers levels of traction abroad, and now the Inodan has been rendered nearly unusable for residents, so packed it is all day long. The area around Kamakura Kakumi, a fully residential neighborhood without a single commercial shop, the area gains no economic benefit from the tourists, is filled with tourists lugging giant suitcases. Many are only in Japan for a few days amid hotspot gauntlet runs, sleeping on overnight buses without hotels to store their luggage at, standing in the middle of the road vying for a selfie. Woe be anyone who lives near that station. Their lives exist in an eternal state of disruption. This over-tourism is happening mostly because of algorithms collimating the attention of the masses towards very specific activities slash places. There's also a slightly nutty narcissism slash selfish component to it, too, fueling that impulse to at all costs get a photo at a specific spot to share on a specific social media service. See Fushimi Inari. If the algorithm is the gas, cheapness is the spark. Because damn, is it cheap to travel these days. Combined with the fact that there have never been more middle-class people in the world, and you get over-tourism. In a way, over-tourism complications and disruptions are what happens when humanity wins, and more people have more time and money to go do things. Japan now gets more visitors in a month than it got in a year 20 years ago. But where are all these people coming from? How has the globe become tumescent with travelers? Well, the world is a lot wealthier today than it was in 2005. China is the most stunning example of economic empowerment. In 2000, the country has roughly 30 million middle-class citizens. Today, over 500 million. Flying Shanghai to Tokyo takes less than 3 hours. You can book a 3-night, 4-day package with flight, hotel, and tours for $500 and USD on the cheap or $1,000 if you want something a bit more fancy. That's an easy travel ask for a country with as much cool as Japan. The proximity and political stability of Japan also means a lot of tower mansions are going up in Tokyo, with the explicit purpose of being sold to wealthy Chinese individuals looking for nearby escape hatches. When you've only got a couple of days, the purpose of the trip then becomes explicitly about ticking off those social media must visits, and it's harder to take a risk or explore off the beaten path. But explosive middle class or not, the algorithm knows no socioeconomic boundaries. Even the ultra-rich aren't immune from contorting themselves to bag the big five for social cash or status or whatever drives a person to do such a thing. As Wiedemann notes, Julia Mita, who runs a high-end travel company in Japan, she recently helped plan a honeymoon for a billionaire's daughter, said she sometimes struggles with clients who treat a trip to Kyoto like a safari. You want to bag the big five, she said. You want to see the lion and the elephant, and you want to go to the Golden Pavilion and Fushimi Inari, as well as Arashiyama, Kiyomizu-dera, and Nijo Castle. Mita often asks clients if they are strong enough to come home from Japan and tell their friends they bagged only one or two. A lot of people are not strong enough, she said. They want the selfies. I've come to see over-tourism as a kind of natural disaster. How can you get angry at the earth for having an earthquake? The mechanisms of capitalism and the American-born ethos of infinite growth social media, which TikTok simply aped slash built atop, have come together to form this demented stew, this blight on cities like Kyoto, Venice, and more, by operating at a scale and level of abstraction beyond human comprehension. Lest life turn into an endless Jeremiad, you have to frame it all properly. Because, here's the heartening bit, more people than ever are traveling, and while sure the majority of those travelers are just following trends and lists, there is another group, a small cohort of self-aware travelers who are genuinely, deeply curious about the places they're visiting, who desire to engage directly without being disruptive. Who want to engage fully and authentically, that is, visiting people in places that haven't twisted themselves for the sake of transient visitors, i.e. no renaming things samurai spies. And that small cohort, let's say 15% of global travelers, is larger than the total number of travelers the world saw 20 years ago. Amotsando. Jin. They're lost, like villages washed away by a tsunami. Much like I don't understand the heart of a wave, I do not understand the hearts of those who come to Japan to buy a Rimowa suitcase. Quite frankly, it really freaks me out. And it is not our job to understand. But that 15% of best-of-class tourists. Every country has them and oh, they're amazing. And when I recommend a city like Morioka or Yamaguchi or Toyama, I have them explicitly in mind. They are the travelers I want to introduce to these places, and mercifully they self-select to go to a city like Morioka, a city far from Kyoto in the opposite direction even. The folks on the quick packages, the folks here to buy fancy suitcases and Rolex watches at a slight discount, the folks who are not brave enough to skip the big five, those traveling within a small aperture, a narrow ambit they won't adventure beyond, they won't go to Morioka. And so in this way, these places are insulated from overtourism. But the lover of all things Japan, the tourist who has studied the language, they go to Morioka. I know because I interview tourists when I'm up there. They always surprise me in the best possible way. Oh, this is my 25th visit to Japan, one Taiwanese visitor told me he was showing his mom around. A couple had rented a car and were spending a month exploring Tohoku. Another visitor was spending a leisurely week in Morioka alone before heading to Fukuoka for a few months. These kinds of folks buoy the chest, elevate the soul, like witnessing a person stand on an escalator and just stare into the distance, refusing the siren call of their smartphone. I don't know if there's some platonic or deontic mode of travel, but in my opinion, the most rewarding point of traveling is to sit with and spend time with the other, even if the place slash people aren't all that different. To go off the beaten track a bit, just a bit, to challenge yourself, to find a nook of quietude, and to try to take home some goodness, a feeling, a moment, you might observe off in the wilds of Iwate or Aomori. That little bundle of goodness filtered through your own cultural ideals, that's good globalism at work. With an ultimate goal of doing all this, without imposing on or overloading the locals. To being an additive part of the economy financially and culturally, to commingling with regulars without displacing them. It is difficult these days to glean something from Kiyomizu-dera, a place that demands quiet contemplation and stillness and offers none. Thankfully, Japan has 100,000 other great temples to visit. There is tremendous opportunity for a country like Japan, a country with the attention and adoration of the world's travelers. The opportunity is to redirect that 15% of exceptional committed tourists, to disperse their positive economic and cultural impact out beyond Kyoto and Hiroshima and Shibuya. Because when visitors and locals connect at a sustainable scale, everyone wins. As for the over-tourism masses, Japan should treat them like an energy source. They are like the winds and rains of a seasonal monsoon, but one controlled and predictable. They contain incredible amounts of wealth to be extracted in exchange for selfies. Japan should consider getting rid of the tax-free shopping program, which causes headaches for residents. It slows down checkouts considerably. Thankfully, the system is shifting to tax refund at the airport from November 2026, which should fix this issue. And should probably charge a higher exit fee called the Sayonara tax, currently a whopping $7 USD as of July 2025. They could easily charge double or triple and funnel the additional funds into infrastructure to ease the burden on residents of over-touristed areas. And given the extreme weakness of the Japanese yen, there should probably be local and non-local entrance fees for some of these hotspots. Paradoxically, despite the numbers of inbound tourists, there's never been a better time to explore the B-side of Japan. Cities like Yamaguchi and Toyama are eager for visitors and don't suffer from over-tourism. They require a little more work than Kyoto, but the benefits are profound. They are cities composed of incredible networks of small businesses, cafes, and restaurants, forming expressive and unique local textures. They are cities with rich histories. They are close to nature mountains, old walks. They are accessible by train. They are walkable and become archetypical for what's possible outside the mega centers of Japan. They inspire me, and I bet they'd inspire you too. If you do happen to find a great place, a perfect little hole in the wall, just please do us all a favor. Don't post about it on TikTok. More soon. See. Noted.